Hi, my name is Alejandra Salimi, and you're listening to the Healing Theology Podcast. Hello, everybody who's listening. I am so excited to welcome you to the first episode of the Healing Theology Podcast. My name is Alejandra. I am a PhD student here at Duke University. I'm doing my PhD in the Population Health Sciences Department. I'm a second year. And earlier, as I was preparing for this episode, I was sitting down in front of a blank Word document, trying to write some notes of what I wanted my first episode of hopefully many episodes to look like. And I was sitting at my desk, which I have Ana Maria Azazel-Diaz's Mujerista Theology out on my desk and a couple of other books that I've been reading through that are written as a call to action, as a voice of resistance and grit for underrepresented scholars in the academy. And so it might be a wonky place to start the podcast focusing on the intersection of religion and public health, but this pedagogy or this way of thinking and learning that focuses ideas and people and things that are not typically seen in the academy, in scholarship, in what is deemed as important is really at the heart of healing theology. And it's at the heart of who I am as a scholar myself. So it might be helpful to lay out some groundwork for this first episode. What is healing theology? If you tuned in, it's probably because you personally know me. So thank you for showing up for me. Or maybe not. Maybe you heard about it through a friend of a friend and you're wondering, what is this thing, right? Why a podcast? Why religion and public health? We have so much groundwork to cover. And so I just kind of want to jump right in. Healing theology is the culmination of many, many, many years. Many years of dreaming, many years of being curious, of pursuing passions of my heart. I feel myself getting emotional, which is really interesting. That is what maybe some religious spaces might call the spirit moving through me. Also just excitement and like watching exciting dreams come true, I guess. So healing theology, it started back in 2019 officially. It started as a blog post that I put on the interwebs. It started as the product of me being asked to give a sermon at the campus ministry where I was at. I did my undergrad at the University of Florida. I think it was 2019. It could have been 2018. I don't remember. I think I was a senior though. So it was 2019, University of Florida, finishing up my bachelor's of public health. And at the time I was working at the university's counseling and wellness center, which is essentially a place for health services, mental health services specifically for the university. I was leading suicide prevention trainings there. And I was also working as a social justice intern at the campus ministry that I was at the university. And so the campus leaders, the campus pastors essentially asked me to give a sermon on suicide, suicide prevention, mostly because I was working in that space on campus already. And so I did what most pastors do, and I went straight to Professor Google to see what was online already, like what existed on this conversation of religion and suicide and mental health, because honestly, it felt like a huge ask to give a sermon to college students on suicide prevention. Perhaps no surprise to you, but at the time I was shocked that there was really nothing that existed online. Well, maybe that's a lie. There was a couple of things, but the things that did exist were really tainted with this underlying language of sinning connotations and this general suggestion that the issue was of the individual. It was a weakness of the individual. And it really painted this really serious health issue, health concern that impacts so many people in a really negative connotation. And so I was quite shocked. And so in the spirit of resistance, as always, I wrote my sermon fully. So I wrote like a manuscript and decided to publish it on website, thinking that I could continue posting more blogs around health related issues for, you know, as I kept moving forward through my studies. And so I was hoping to kind of start toying with this like theological approach to like health issues that intrigued me. And I don't know, I was a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed person then, and I probably still am now. And so I was maybe 21, 22. I landed on the healing theology name. I don't remember, maybe out of happenstance, it sounded pretty and it sounded like It blended the ideas of science and religion in an interesting way. So I paid for the URL in 2019, I guess, and continued paying for the yearly fee 5 years later while it collected virtual dust, because I did not post any other blogs after that sermon that I gave back in 2019. So I stayed at the University of Florida for one more year after that. I finished my Master's of Public Health in Social Behavioral Sciences. And at the time, I was juggling a couple of different jobs. I was still working at that Counseling and Wellness Center doing that suicide prevention work. I was in my last years of my master's, so I was doing a kind of practicum. I was working at the only OBGYN clinic in the area that accepted Medicaid. And so we saw a lot of women of color, a lot of women who were experiencing a wide range of addiction, a lot of like opioid addiction during pregnancy, which was really difficult, really tricky. And then at the time, I was also leading social justice ministries in the United Methodist Church in the Florida Conference at the same time. So safe to say I was way too busy and way too overworked. But in that final year, I really began to also scramble to figure out what my next move was. I was a couple of years from graduating, or sorry, a couple of months from graduating with my master's, and I was about to be released into the world, and I needed to figure out what came next. Along my journey, especially the latter years of my time at UF, I was really encouraged to explore theology further by people at my campus ministry, people that I had met in the religious space. And they really started encouraging me to go to divinity school and maybe like become a pastor. And I was like, ah, that's weird. I don't know what that means. You know, I always felt like it was way out of my wheelhouse. I was a public health scientist. I'm a scientist. I'm not a theologian. And I felt really uncomfortable with the idea of going to pastor training school. Like, it just didn't feel like me. And I also couldn't shake the kind of curiosity that kept brewing around physical health, mental health, and spiritual health. This kind of trifecta that I think popped up in pretty much all of my applications at that time. I decided that I wanted to move to Boston, or to up north, really, but I ended up only applying to schools in Boston. And so I did some divinity school applications and a couple of PhDs in public health. I just kind of tossed the wide net and was like, I'm going to go to Boston after this and we'll figure it out. That was probably in November of 2019 to like the spring of 2020. In the March of 2020 was a whirlwind for all of us. I'm sure that you all can remember exactly where you were in the March of 2020. For me, there was a really crazy 48 hours that second week of March. There was, I think, a Tuesday or Wednesday of that week that I got accepted to Harvard Divinity School, which had become a massive dream of mine. I never thought that an immigrant girl from Columbia would be able to say that she went to Harvard, and it happened. And then I think maybe a day or two later, I turned 23. And then literally a day or two after that, the world shut down. We were fully in a pandemic, and life, as we all know it, drastically changed. And so I virtually graduated with my Master's of Public Health in May of 2020. And quite literally a day after that, maybe a day or two after virtually graduating, I was driving down to Fort Myers, Florida, to work as a contact tracer in the Department of Health in Florida. I was one of the only, if not the only, Spanish speaker in the office where I was working for a long period of time. I was there pretty much all summer. And because I was one of the only Spanish speakers, if not the only one, I was dealing with the outbreaks that were happening among the migrant farm workers in the area. Lee County, which is where Fort Myers is at, is really close to Immokalee, Florida. And there's a lot of farm workers that labor over the land there. And so a quick shout out to the Coalition of Immokalee Workers that have always been at the root of my passion for justice, really tied to theological pursuit of liberation theology, and also tied to my Latinidad and the fact that a lot of times Hispanics are seen as people who labor in the field. Yeah, it's interesting to get so emotional about it, because I remember it being such an interesting season of my life. There was a time, I think, when I was contact tracing. Like I said, I was, maybe there was one more person every once in a while. We were like deployed was a language that they used. And so we would be deployed for 14 days. And so there was a lot of like turnaround, but I stayed pretty much the entire summer. I think I took maybe a week and a half off because I had to move out of my apartment in Gainesville and then came right back to another county. But I will never forget having to deal with so many oftentimes undocumented Latinos in the area. And they were obviously nervous because it was a governmental number calling them, asking them all of this personal information, asking them about who they lived with, who they had seen. And so it was really bizarre. I felt so close to them culturally and also felt like, for very good reason, like I was the enemy in that moment. And I will never forget, because God forbid we have more than Spanish represented. We had one case that was a Brazilian mother who obviously spoke Portuguese. And I remember she didn't, I spoke to her in Spanish and kind of stumbled our way through it, but she handed her phone to who I imagine was maybe her 7 or 8 year old daughter. And it was her daughter who was translating for her mom as I was trying to get all the information from her. And just, you know, I think we'll get to this later on, but I think this is where religion is such an interesting factor where it plays a different role in different communities. And I think in the Latino community, as I've seen it, it's more a cultural, right? Like it's the practices of going to church, but it's also the subconscious prayers that I think we say of like, oh my God, I hope that I'm going to be okay. Or like, God protect us, right? Like these very casual phrases that are spoken. One of my favorite things to tell people, and I've said this to a couple of family members and they kind of get shaken every time I say it. There's a phrase called, or it's something that you say, it's like, ojalá, something happens, right? Like God willing, this will happen. Ojalá stems from like Allah. So it has this root in actually like Muslim faith traditions of like Allah willing, God willing, right? And so it's so common across the Hispanic diaspora. And anyways, it's a diverge, I guess, of a conversation, but showcases how religion is so ingrained in our culture. And I think being a contact tracer, I got to hear the kind of immediate prayers of people as I had a call and tell them that they had this horrible illness that was killing people left and right. Anyways, I was the only Spanish speaker in these counties. And I was also getting all of the hot gossip of churches in the area who were refusing to also close at the time. We had so many cases, so many outbreaks, super spreader events that were happening because a Sunday service was still being held and turned into this massive super spreader event. On top of that, I remember so vividly, this is when a lot of the big protests started erupting because of the horrific murders of George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery as they spread across the country and across the world. It was this really interesting, you know, I'm not telling you anything you probably don't know, but it was an interesting time for this like collective racial reckoning where we started understanding the duality of the pandemics that were happening, both police brutality and the systemic racism that is happening in our country and in the world, but also the biological component of this invisible to the eye disease that was killing people left and right. It was such an interesting time for so many of us, but I think watching the public health emergencies of these systemic failures unfold shaped me to my core. I was a young professional. I was 2 weeks into officially being a public health scientist. And I felt, and I think many of my cohort members felt like we were just getting dropped into the deepest waters in the ocean and trying to make sense of it. And so in that time, I will be honest and say my mental health completely tanked. It was a really, really difficult time for me personally. For all of us, I think we all were struggling in those early months and years of the pandemic, but healing theology kept on popping back into my mind during that season of life. And I began to wonder how, if at all, religion and public health fit together. Because for so long, I had been told that they were like oil and water. They didn't make sense together. And so it wasn't worth pursuing academically. It wasn't something that was perceived as a viable option in academia. Like the scholarship of it was just not that interesting. At least so I thought. I started my journey at Harvard Divinity School determined to name myself first and foremost as a scientist. I was not there as a theologian. I had no interest of being a pastor. I was just a scientist passing through. Because really no one in my family was really that religious. And no one I knew in my immediate family had ever considered even going through the ordination process, which is its own wild west of trying to figure out if you don't have kind of that institutional knowledge of how that process goes. Like I said, I was always just a scientist passing through. Don't mind me. I'm just curious, but I'm not staying for long. I just wanted to learn more about religion and justice. And my concentration at Harvard Div was religion, ethics, and politics. And so the integration of politics into the conversation was so interesting. I wanted to see how it might play into this whole conversation. And, you know, at the time, this was when the bishop of the conference of the Florida Conference of the Methodist Church reached out to me with some of his cabinet essentially like the top people that lead the Florida Conference of the Methodist Church. They reached out to me and wanted to see if I could put together a type of toolbox that could be given to churches to help them navigate the pandemic. So how could they mitigate the spread? How could they disseminate information that was being given out by the CDC and the WHO and others to help their congregants stay healthy and hopefully not spread COVID-19? And so we can put it in the show notes, but I created this, I think it was called The Color of Coronavirus. There was a toolkit that ended up getting translated, I think, into maybe 4 or 5 different languages with resources in various languages. And it really looked at this kind of multicultural lens of how the pandemic was impacting us systemically, but also ways that we could prevent the spread of it. They asked me to stay on as a public health liaison or public health consultant, I can't remember, for the year. And so as I began my divinity school journey, I also started working as this like hired scientist for this big denomination at the time. And I kept on thinking about what it was going to be like to help to educate and equip congregations as the pandemic kept raging on, all while having healing theology in the back of my mind. I probably have pictures on my phone of me laying out all these ideas. And, you know, I remember asking on my Instagram story, like, what topics around religion and health are you interested in? And my fellow friends and followers gave me ideas anywhere from vaccine uptake to abortion to, you know, nutrition. There were so many curiosities that I didn't realize people had. So anyways, fast forward through divinity school, I began getting a better sense of religion as a social determinant of health. A phrase that, to my knowledge, was coined by Dr. Ellen Eidler at Emory, who happens to be on the Healing Theology Board and, as of today, agreed to be on my dissertation committee, which is a wild full circle. But I finally was starting to get the language for what these curiosities look like, right? Religion as a social identity, religion as a social determinant of health. I began realizing that there was actually literature, not much, but some literature around this, and began trying to read as much as I could while I was writing my master's thesis. The solidifying moment during my time at divinity school was the winter holiday, though, between my first and second semester. I remember it very vividly. I was watching the news coverage pour out. It was January 6th of 2021, I suppose. And I was watching live coverage of people holding Bibles and crosses talking about Jesus and Trump, all while there was this massive pandemic, none of them or most of them not being masks. And as you all probably know, our Capitol being stormed, the insurrection was happening. I know I posted a picture of this on my Twitter, but I there was a picture of people storming the Capitol and there was a sign that said like Jesus saves or something like that while people were storming the Capitol. And I remember tweeting like, this is in one picture, the exact reason why I'm in divinity school and why I'm studying what I'm studying. I knew in that moment that religion and also politics were a massive influencing factor for health behaviors, beliefs, policy, and so much more. And that brings us to today. I am now at Duke in my second year. I'm getting this PhD in population health sciences. And as I'm trying to make sense of my time in school and understanding religion as a social determinant of health, I'm starting to just grow more curious. Religion sometimes serves as a protective factor. So something that can help people live longer lives or help mitigate negative health outcomes. Religion has been found to help people with mental illness, meaning that it helps mitigate depression or sadness or loneliness. It has been found to help people with cancer outcomes, like people with higher religiosity sometimes have better cancer outcomes than people who are not religious. And it's also a risk factor, right? I probably don't have to say much about the way that religion can and has caused harm, right? The recent turn of Roe v. Wade was deeply influenced by religious politics. The way that suicide skyrockets around queer youth and queer people who are in really religious spaces is pretty well documented, right? And so religion is such a weird, and I say it with all of my heart, it's such a weird identity because I can't think of a single other social identity that we can have that can be both so positive and so negative for our health outcome, just depending on how it's applied. It's an identity that impacts all levels of the socio-ecological model, if you'll go with me for a second. It's a very popular model in the health sciences, and I'm sure in other spaces as well. But if you think of it like an onion, that the core of it is you, and then it branches out from there, it's you, and then your interpersonal interactions, so it's you and your immediate family, your friends, your community, society policy is like the onion, right? And religion, I would argue, fits into every one of those layers, as we have seen from, you know, personal practices of prayer and what some scholars call intrinsic versus extrinsic religion. And it goes from there, right? Like the religious practices that our parents teach us oftentimes, you know, stick with us for a long time. I read a paper recently that was talking about the religious reservoir that we have as children and how that comes back to us as adults. I'd never heard of this before. It was a study done in Italy during the pandemic and how religious reservoir helped people cope with the scariness and the uncertainty and the doubt of losing people. Because obviously Italy was really hit hard at the beginning of the pandemic. Anyways, so this is what I do all day, is I sit and read and think about religion and public health, and I get to get paid not much, but my job right now, my job is scholar. As Ken's job is beach, my job is scholar. I get to create knowledge and think and have opinions. And most importantly, I get to be taught by the most incredible scholars who I cannot believe know my name, let alone are willing to have conversations with me as I pursue my curiosities. The privilege of getting to go to some of the most prestigious schools in the world is something that I don't take lightly. And I love what I do. I love what I study. And I think that passion is really what is fueling healing theology and its creation, is that I don't want to keep it for myself. I want to share it with the world, or with anybody who's curious, at least. I have been brushing off the virtual dust of this platform and putting my energy behind it to get it off the ground. As I mentioned, I've had the most absurd privilege getting to move through these academic spaces and getting taught by these world-renowned leaders in the fields of religion and health. And see, along the way, it's interesting. At the beginning, I was like, oh, nobody really talks about this. Nobody has really done that. I'm not going to say that now I have found thousands of people. It's still a very under-researched, understudied field, but I have met incredible professors and young professionals along the way in their own corners of the world who are pursuing various iterations of these ideas. And in an effort to dismantle the ivory tower that often keeps education locked away behind private events and publication paywalls, I wanted to create this podcast. I wanted this podcast, and I want this podcast, and this podcast will be hopefully an accessible outlet for people anywhere from researchers to theologians to just generally curious people who maybe have never gone to any type of higher education. You are all welcome here as we have these conversations with people who have thought long and hard about religion and health and religion and all of the different ways those two play with one another. I hope to bring and will be bringing experts from a wide range of fields, scientists, medical professionals, clergy, theologians, people who are working in the public sector, the private sector, in academia, people who are running nonprofits, people who work in politics. I will be bringing them onto this platform and asking them questions and asking them to share their stories and expertise with us. Our podcast will be hopefully available anywhere you get your podcasts, thanks to my amazing video audio editor, Emily, my dear friend, who is in the room and helping me cope through the first episode. She's a real energy in the room today. I also hope to be a space for conversation in the near future through the form of virtual mixers, book clubs, journal clubs. Hopefully you can tell by now, as I've been ranting for God knows how long, this is a passion project from the depth of my heart and from the various aspects of my life and from the curiosity of my mind. I invite you to be curious with me. I hope to be as bipartisan as I possibly can be, knowing that I definitely have a bias towards a certain side, but I hope to be able to provide perspective of the wide range of religion and the wide range of health and public health as it is experienced in the world. And so all I ask is that you come to this space curious and willing to engage in conversation, because if nothing else, as we continue to deal with a world that is growing much more polarizing by the day, in the year of 2024, a big election year for the US and for many other countries across the world, I want this space to be a place of conversation and a place of curiosity and anything but a place of polarization. I hope this podcast will spark conversations amongst yourselves, amongst your friends, with me. And I hope to begin to carve out a solid space, a solid virtual space, maybe a physical space one day, for intersectional scientists and theologians like myself. I have had a quote floating through my mind for a couple of weeks now as I really thought about launching this seriously. And it's a quote by the incredible Toni Morrison. And she says, if there's a book you want to read, but it hasn't been written yet, then you must write it. And I think Healing Theology is my own adaptation of that quote. I have felt so isolated in my academic journey. I don't really fit into the space of religion fully in divinity school. And I don't really fit into the College of Med where I am now in public health departments. It's been really, really weird and really hard to be gaslighting myself and honestly being gaslit by others to think that this work is irrelevant or too niche or that it doesn't matter. But I have yearned for a space to connect with others who are also interested in these similar conversations. And I hope that my creation of Healing Theology and its podcast and whatever other things that come from it can be my attempt to create that very space that I have longed for a long time. I hope that I can inspire a version of myself, perhaps in the past, perhaps 2 years or 5 years or 10 years behind me, who is curious about these things as well, feeling inclined and passionate about these type of conversations, but maybe haven't found it yet. I hope that when you are asked to write a sermon of some sort on some really difficult health topic and you Google it, you stumble across healingtheology.com instead of stumbling across horrific, sin-evoking, weird connotating websites that do nothing for the field of religion and health. And lastly, I hope that these conversations and this platform as a whole can be a motivation to continue pursuing whatever curiosities we have in our hearts. So I think that's the first episode. Yeah, that's it. Thanks for tuning in to the Healing Theology podcast. Special thanks to our video and audio editor, Emily Nagamoto. Thank you for our illustrations from Katie L, who you can find on Fiverr, and original music by Mosado Music, who will be linked as well. If you want to find out more about our podcast, you can follow us on all social media platforms, and you can find the link tree in our bio for where to find us. You can also follow us along on healingtheology.com. Thanks for tuning in.